Omaha Public Radio, KIOS-FM, presents another luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club. Today's speaker will be Omaha native John Hoich, author of the new book, From the Ground Up. This program was recorded by KIOS-FM on Thursday, March 15, 2007, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of the Omaha Press Club, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the program is Gary Kerr.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Gary Kerr, chairman of the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee. At least once a month, the Press Club sponsors a noon forum featuring people and topics we think will be of interest to our members and the general public. Our noon forums are open to the public. You do not have to be a Press Club member to attend. Today, our noon forum features John Hoich. This is the story of an Omaha man who survived a poor, abusive childhood to become a highly successful businessman who has given back to the community in many ways, including charity work and serving on nonprofit boards of directors. He's currently a member of the Omaha Planning Board. All of this grew out of a lawn mowing business he started as a teenager to support his brothers and sisters. I read someplace that John doesn't like to mow lawns anymore. I don't know why. Today marks the launch of a book he has written about his experiences called From the Ground Up. After our program, books will be available for sale here at the club, and John will be available to sign them. All profits, by the way, from the book sales go to charity. We're going to hear from John for about 20 minutes or so. Then he will take your questions. There's paper and pencil at your tables. Please write down your questions, and they will be brought to me to ask from the podium. So, it's a pleasure for me to introduce John Hoich.
When Gary was in Rotary and I ever had to follow him, I had to pull the mic down. It's a little shorter. He's tall and good looking. Well, thank you everybody for being here. I'm not a real good speaker like this gentleman. He's the best, but at the same time, I also lost my voice this week, so please be patient with me, and I'm going to try to get through this the best I can, and I'm very grateful that everybody's here that's part of my close friends and family, and as well as those that are new faces. Thank you for taking your time and being here today. And I guess I'll get started. There's an old saying that what doesn't kill you, I got to take these off. There's an old saying that what doesn't kill you will make you stronger. I'm here today because what happened in my life sure made me strong. My childhood and teenage years were pretty miserable, and they were years of surviving and working to overcome adversity. But all that happened in my life has helped me be stronger. About 10 years ago, I decided to share what I had learned with others, and I began gathering notes on my life experiences. I thought writing this book from the ground up, it's not just business, could help others succeed, and success is not just business. Life is about overcoming adversity, being focused on what you want, identifying positive role models, and mentors, and sticking with the positive. Even when life looks the most negative, not many people will have as many cards stacked against them as I did in my youth. But if I can achieve success, others can too. It's a choice, but it's hard work to make that choice, and it's choice that has to be made every single day in everything you do. I'm glad I made that choice. I still make it every day, but it didn't start out that way. You'd think that growing up in a West Omaha home in a two-parent family would prepare me for a successful life journey. But when I was 10 years old, I thought my life was over. It hadn't been much of a life until then, and I felt like giving up. I lived in a fear of an alcoholic father. He regularly beat my mother and me, and alternate between fear and depression, and then one night I had a dream. I was in a barn on a hill. Inside the barn were my father and a lot of other people. Most of them were all bad. The barn was burning, and I was up on the rafters trying to escape the flames when Jesus came to the barn, took my hand, and led me out and I was safe. As we walked away from the barn, Jesus told me he had saved me because he had a plan for my life. I woke up in the middle of the night and couldn't remember every detail of that dream. And I still do. I woke up that night and could remember every detail of that dream, and I still do. It was like God had spoken to me. Given my background, coming from an abusive alcoholic home, I could have turned out quite differently, but from that night on, my life took a different direction. I was filled with resolve and confidence. I realized that the barn was a metaphor for our home, which was a burning hell. I knew from then on, even if things I didn't change around me, I could still make my life mean something. I could be a success. That dream and focus I had helped me to build my life and my other careers. Adversity strengthened me, strengthened my resolve, and strengthened my purpose in life. I started to work at a very early age, carrying newspapers and mowing lawns, just to help Mom keep the family together. Mom even helped me buy a Sears Craftsman lawnmower. It served me well, and I've kept that machine. In fact, it's pictured on the cover of my book. Thankfully, Dad moved out when I was 11. He provided little or no child support, so that left Mom and me to take care of the family. But she didn't have the best of life herself. Mom was the second youngest of 14 children. She had been abused as a child and wound up marrying an abusive drunk. She suffered from nervous breakdowns and had to be hospitalized from time to time. Often she was away. Dad sexually abused my sisters. Dad, when he wasn't beating me or Mom, most of the time he'd call me a worthless bastard and I'd never amount to anything. Years later, I found out that he was half right because he wasn't my real father. Mom was pregnant when she met John Hoich, and I still have no idea who my biological father is, even though I searched as hard as I can. When I was just 16, my mother suddenly died. She was only 39 years old. Her heart gave out, probably from working so hard to keep the family together and all of her other problems. At her funeral, I promised her, at her casket, that I would take care of my brothers and sisters, my brother and sisters, and that I would do everything I could to help them get through life as much as possible. I knew I would need more than lawn jobs than the few that I already had, so I got busy and got more. That wasn't easy because at the time, mowing lawns wasn't something you paid someone else to do. Little did I know at the time, but that lawnmowers would sure become the avenue to my success. After my mother died and my sisters, brother and I were split up staying in various foster homes, sometimes those were good situations and sometimes they weren't that much better than being at home. My sisters and brother and I needed a place to stay, but we were practically penniless, and we moved in with Bob and Sammy Smith, our neighbors, where we had often stayed when Mom was hospitalized. The Smiths became my parents, and I stayed with them until I graduated from high school. They were pretty tough on me, but also fair. They fortified my sense of hard work, honesty, and stick to it, enviously, which my mother had instilled in me. I'm grateful to the Smiths to this day for all that they had taught me. My brother Michael, who was 10 years younger than me, was in very poor health. He was born with three holes in his heart, upside down and reversed. And that little heart needed a lot of major surgery, and the chances of survival was slim. But someone had told the World Herald about the story, and money was needed for a surgery came pouring in. Some years later, when Michael needed another surgery, the World Herald ran another story, and money was there again for his surgery. Michael came through the first surgery very successfully, and the second surgery successfully, and then unfortunately, he was in his third year of college, and I had talked to him a week before that. He had called me and was coming home that weekend, and the next day I got a call that he had died at 21 with a heart attack. After my mother's death, I took $3,300 from my share of the house after our debt was cleared, purchased a truck for my business, and put down a payment of a house on 23rd and B Street. In the meantime, my lawn care business continued to grow. I knew I needed additional equipment to keep growing. One of the first business purchases I made was a Toro lawnmower, and it served me as well. When I was in high school, I participated in Toro's Young Entrepreneur Program purchases, and they gave me 50% off on all my purchases. And I won first place in the United States for that that program and got the award, in which included giving me also a $1,000 college scholarship and a lot of recognition in my business, which helped me improve my sales to more customers. Under that program, being the Western Regional winner and runner-up in the national level, it also got me to build a lot of relationships with Toro and getting to build the business, which was the big key to my success. About that time, I knew I needed to duplicate myself, so I looked for the first of many partners. One of those partnerships brought me more trouble. I forgot that in business, you need to balance predictable debt with profit expansion. I didn't realize the need to diversify when possible and didn't partner with the right individuals as they didn't have the track record for success. At 24 years old, I nearly went bankrupt in 1982 when interest rates got to 22%, if any of you remember that time. And I was actually in front of the attorney at his office ready to sign the bankruptcy papers, and the attorney looked at me and said, you know, just sign here. Bankruptcy's like Rolaids. It's instant relief. I just couldn't sign those papers. As I started to sign my name, I remember dropping the pen. I told the attorney I got myself into this. I got to get myself out of it, and I did. And in 1979, I formalized my business, which was Hoich Enterprises Incorporated, and then in 82 started it all over again. Soon after, we had 50 employees and more lawn contracts for my work. In 1989, I bought my first 80 acres, primarily as a ranch to raise horses and a place to live and run my business. And this isn't on my notes, but that all happened by Joe McDermott one night calling me at 11 o'clock at night, and he said, "Hey, kid, I want you to go to 186 in Harrison and knock on the door first thing about 6 in the morning and wake the guy up and tell him you want to buy this place." And I'll never forget it. I knocked on the door, and this Bill Teal answers the door. He goes, "What do you want?" You know, and I said, "I want to buy your place." And he said, "Well, it's 6 o'clock in the morning." I said, "I know, but I want to get it done right away." So the persistence of that night, and then Joe and Ada McDermott read the Sunday World Herald that about 12 hours before everybody else did, and they probably still do today. And they've been like parents to me my whole life, too, in my business career. And I don't know if it's in this that I wrote, but I've always softly said that they carried me longer than my mother did. She only carried me 9 months. So I love them a lot. They were there for me. They've been, and her son today is here, and he's like a brother in my heart. I hope he feels the same, and Ada's been a great person in my life. I love you guys. But that was a place to live without a few animals at that ranch, and before I knew it, I had quite a number of them, some exotic. And today it's a petting zoo. And back then I set up the petting zoo and hosted hundreds of organizations for charities and lots of children. And today the place is a subdivision called Sugar Creek, and it houses about 800 homes, and I'm building a 30-acre commercial site there. So that land has done me well, and I bought all the ground around it, and it was one of my best real estate investments. So thanks again, Joe, for your guidance. In 1989, I began to look at another lawn care contract and put myself in for a bid for the grounds maintenance at Offutt Air Force Base. After successfully obtaining that business, we began to bid on other contracts for ground maintenance around the country for military bases. Today, we handle contracts in about 4 states and growing. We mow about 20,000 acres a week, and it's been a very thriving business doing the military bases, and I want to thank you for your taxpaying dollars. In the mid-80s, we also expanded in sprinkler system business and opened Hoich Irrigation. And I didn't know a lot about the sprinkler business, But I was lucky enough to have enough talent around me that someone would teach me how, and sprinklers were like a luxury, and now they became a necessity, and we installed over 6,500 sprinkler systems around the good city of Omaha, and they're all working still. I learned another rule of success: surround yourself with experts who know the business and who have the eye of the tiger and want to be the best. Since I owned property for some years, I was always real interested in real estate. It seemed like a natural business expansion. So in 1992, I went in business with a partner named Jerry Slusky after I had done some of my first deals with Chuck Lakin, who's here today. So Chuck and I did our first single dwelling properties and a couple threeplexes, and we got our butts kicked on some deals and had some evictions and cockroaches, but we learned a lot about real estate. And those were the beginning days, and then I got in business with a real estate attorney, and he taught me a lot as well as Chuck did, and between the two of them, we bought a lot of real estate in this good town with a nice, living in Omaha is kind of nice with real estate because it grows 3 to 5% a year, and it doesn't have this going on. It has a nice steady, and so we live in a good city, don't we? I learned a lot from these guys, and they were great gentlemen. And again, it's money buys experience. Experience winds up with the money, and that's one of the favorite phrases I say. So I always just believe in that, that you can't ever stop learning, or even you, Gary. Real estate, as all in business people say, location, location, location. But then there are other ingredients to that formula for success, whether it's real estate or anything else. You got to build the right product, whether it's a strip mall, apartments or warehouses, office buildings, homes, or any other product. You got to build in the right area, and you've got to build at the right time. In other words, make certain it's that it's available to the right market for your timing and good launching for the product. You got to build that product correctly using the best possible materials, and also have to see the unique value in your product that will allow you to advertise it better than the next guy so you can sell it, rent it, or lease it. Another step to success is picking your segment and then sticking with it and focusing on it. I think that's one of the biggest things I've done in my career is for 32 years since 1974, I've just always mowed lawns. I remember a lot when I was younger, people would say, "What do you do?" And with being from a divorced family and on welfare and food stamps in ADC, I'd always remember people saying, "What do you do?" And I'd say, "Mow lawns." And I was just nothing but a mow boy. But back then, it was embarrassing. And today, it's flattering to just say I mow lawns. So it's a lot funner to be able to say it because I still honor it. It's what made my success. And I have a lot of gratefulness to the lawn industry, always will, till the day I die. So keep laying sod and buy it at Loveland. Apartments, retail strips, and malls, and shopping centers, and land develops have been most successful for me. But you have to decide what you want to focus on and stay it with until you've mastered it. Then remember that there's more to it than mastering the mechanics of your task. In addition to getting the right product or idea, you have to be willing to take the risk. Be willing to fail and never, never give up. That goes for you too, Dale. You know, I've heard some people say over and over, "I should have done this," or "I wished I would have done that," or "I could have done that, but..." You know what I have to say? Instead of coulda, shoulda, woulda, I've created my own motto, "Didda, didda, didda." Today, our Hoytsch companies have grown to include grounds maintenance contracts for U.S. government facilities, apartment complexes, shopping centers, done some assisted living investments, a golf course, and now a 50-year military contract with a partner in a housing development off at Air Force Base, which was a dream that I put on, and I was real excited. Not because I wished out, because I did is how it all happened. I've been lucky enough to be in the right place at the right time, surround myself with experts in the business, building my businesses with the help of others, and making a lot of friends and business associates along the way. It came from being extremely focused on my work and applying my talents the best way I could. Probably the major impetus for whatever success I have been was my fear of the past. To escape the world as I knew as a child, to escape the hurt and the pain of being brought up in a divorced family, to escape the alcoholic family, to escape abuse and the lack of money. But what does success look like? It's really how you take your life values and God-given talents and apply them to business every day. It's looking for positive role models and mentors. It's keeping the negative way away in all forms. It's staying busy and staying focused and dedicated. It's in life, we all have to make choices. I choose to be successful, positive, and people to create a successful, positive attitude rather than fall into my negativity that was so much part of my earlier life. Life is growing up, and every day there's a new choice to be made. Every day that choice has to be made if success is your goal. Success only means knowing the importance of caring. I grew up in an adverse situation and also was instilled with some of the good values from my mother and my foster parents and many others. Beyond success in business, success means caring. For God, your country, for your family, for your employees, it also means being involved in your community and giving back. A lot of special organizations made a real impact in my life, and I've worked to help several of them. In fact, the proceeds from my book will go to the John O. Hoyt Center for Recovery, the Stevens Center, the Westside Community Schools Foundation and Scholarship Fund, the Lakeside Hospital Foundation, Rotary International, and I'm sure we'll be doing a lot with Boy Scouts of America. We got Lloyd and Melissa here today and John Hallett from Westside. And I love these causes because they were a big part and touched my life, and they know why. And probably you will, too, if you buy the book. I've also been involved in a lot of other good causes. Their success is important to me as my own business because they are doing so much good in our community. Their work also provides a special kind of inspiration for me because I see the results of what they do, and I know how it helped me. If you're not already involved with your community, I'd encourage you to try it. You'll be surprised at the good you'll do for yourself. But business contacts also you'll make and what you can do for your own business. Is there a real secret to success? I don't know if there is one. But along the way, I did find some ways to build a multi-million-dollar business. I started writing down things that helped me to be successful. Many of my friends call them Hoytisms. Over those years, they have been many of them, and I continue to collect them. I've included a few in my book, Trust in God and All Others Pay Cash. Take care of God first and family second and business third. Find a partner who will watch your back. To be rich is to know when you have enough. Pigs get fat and hogs get slaughtered. Money buys experience and experience winds up with the money. You've got to circulate to percolates, my favorite one that I started at 14 years old. Some people call me circulate to percolate and forget my name. Let me just comment on the last one. You've got to circulate to percolate. You need to promote yourself, your business. One way to do that is to circulate or network. You'll meet new people, make new acquaintances and business contacts. You'll also need to circulate among your employees to help them percolate outstanding ideas. You can learn a lot from your employees. That's where I learn a lot of the things I know. There are just a few things that I learned on my road to success. And at this point in my career, I realized, however, that success is more than a financial balance sheet. Life can't be about the almighty dollar or how many boards you're on or how many much money you can give to someone or what your net worth is or how important you want people to think you are. Life is about sustaining human relationships, how you treat people in such a way that has given meaning to your life. So from the ground up, it's not just business. It's a personal journey with some business advice based on my experiences. I hope what's in my book will help you on a successful path for whatever you choose or whatever you're doing. Remember, if you can work for me, if it can work for me, it will work for you. Thank you for listening. I'm happy to take some questions from the audience, and we'll be there afterwards to sign those books for you, and thank you for being here.
Thank you, John. We do have some questions. I want to remind you again, there is paper and pencil at your table. Please write your questions down, and they will be brought to me. What's your advice regarding the value of education versus experience, John?
Boy, is anybody here from the University of Nebraska in Omaha? Huh? I, of course, if it wasn't for District 66, I don't know how much I'd be here today. They were like parents to me as well. And the teachers in my school educated me a lot, not just about education, but a common sense. So I think that most of my success was from street smarts and common sense, but also from what I could learn from education. In closing on that, I went to 2 years at UNO, and I didn't do real well because I was out mowing lawns 60 hours a week and trying to help with my sisters and brother wherever I could. And I was asked, I don't know, it's in my book, but it's probably my funniest story, is that my best friend Joe Smith, when I was 10 years old, went to Creighton, made the top of his class when he graduated, and he said, I got on the dean's list. And I said, hell, I got a letter from the dean, too. Mine said I can't come back next semester because my grade point average is 1.9. So, but today I've been 8 years serving on the board of directors at UNO at the College of Business with Lou Pohl. He's a great guy, and I feel like now I can give him a lot of common sense. And I remember asking Nancy Belk, she ever looked at my manuscript. She said, well, I sure did. It was great. I said, no, you didn't. But anyway, I think that education is not just everything for everybody is different, and whether it's from school or whether it's from practical application, any which way you can learn, never stop trying.
John, what is your proudest achievement?
Being able to retain the friendships as long as I have. I'm very grateful for a lot of them, and several of them are in here today, and they know who they are. That most, when I remember when I got married and Denise and I had my proudest achievement, probably Jeremy and Justin, my sons. They're twins, 9 years old. But past that, I guess I take big pride in the long-term relationships that I built with many people, and a lot of them are in this room, and for that I'm thankful.
Here's somebody that wants a little more detail on your bankruptcy situation. How did you get out of bankruptcy in your 20s? What did you do?
March 19th, 1982, I had only $1,500 left from a boat that I sold, and I paid that last $1,500 for my sister Donna's wedding that I gave her to have her wedding in Anderson, Nebraska. As I'm driving back, God gave me a vision, and that vision is that something great was going to happen on March 20th, 1982. It was a Monday, and that's when I was going into the attorney's office with Bill Biggs was the attorney, and he says, the Rolaid story, and I dropped the pen and said, I can do it. That afternoon at 2 o'clock, a miracle happened. A building that I had at 84th off of Park Drive sold for full price. So prayer does work. And that was the beginning. And then I went to my creditors, told them I'd pay them back no matter what happens. I did it in SID warrants. I did it in time, and I made payments, and it took me 4 years and paid everybody off. So the creditors that stuck with me, I stuck with as my vendors the rest of my career.
What would be the one piece of advice you'd give to entrepreneurs?
Find a goal. Find a need and fill it, because that's the key to success. There's all kinds of vocations, there's all kinds of possibilities, but find a need and fill it, stick to that goal, and no matter what that vocation is, master it, and do not let go of sight of it. Delegate, but follow up, and don't get into something else till you got it so mastered that you can have somebody manage it correctly while you're doing another thing. The biggest mistake I've seen in my 32-year career is so many people getting into so many different businesses and never taking care of what I always called the Howard Hughes Tool Company. Howard Hughes always had his tool company, and he mastered it. And whenever he made other mistakes in other ventures, he would always have that to follow back up on. So take care of your mothership, your main job or your main business, and it'll always take care of you.
Have you considered real estate in other parts of the country, or business interests in other parts of the country, or are you strictly in Omaha?
I see my good Jewish friend Trenton Maggot here. I always say in my Rotary Club, and Jerry was in our suburban Rotary for many years, and I've had 28 years perfect attendance. And I've quoted in my book that the Jewish businessmen in my Rotary Club have always told me, if you can't drive by it, don't buy it. be able to watch your investments. And I've never met any poorest Jewish guys yet. So I've learned a lot from them, and I'm proud to be their friends because they're wonderful businessmen, and they're like, some of them are like brothers to me, and one of them's in here today, Trenton Maggot. But the bottom line is, I really believe you have to watch your investments and know what you're doing. And I've listened to those gentlemen from the bottom of my heart. I just believe that if you can't watch your investments or your business, you know, that stay local until you got positively an opportunity to grow outside of your area. But I do have some business ventures with my U.S. Grounds company, mowing Air Force and Army posts. We mow over 20,000 acres a week in several states, and that's worked. But I've just been shy of going out of town with real estate investments. So, and if my friend Chuck, he could probably tell you how he's done it. He's in several states with his stuff, but I haven't had the risk for reward tolerance yet to do that.
Let me remind you again, there is paper and pencil at your tables, and so if you have questions for John, why, please write them down, and they will be brought to me. John, you would be such a great inspiration to young people, especially in low economic areas. Do you work with such folks? If you do, in what manner?
I'm proud to say yes. I've probably have talked to most high schools and junior highs from far as north as you can get. Some streets I never even been on, but I found them to speak. Elementary schools, Sacred Hearts, junior highs, high schools, the prisons. I've been in Lincoln and Omaha to the correction centers and have gone. I leave my email with them for questions later. I've talked to probably 500 speeches in my career. I've enjoyed every one of them. And it's never about money. It's about believing in yourself, overcoming adversity, and making it happen at whatever you want to make. And so I want to continue to do that. Kathleen Sullivan's here that's been helping me with my whole book and my journey on it. And now she thinks I should go around and talk to other people around the country. So I might have to go out of Omaha on that one. But I'll make darn sure that I've helped everybody in our local area before I go outside of Omaha.
When times were bad, did you ever regress, become depressed, resort to drink? What happened to your sisters?
Luckily, because my mom smoked 2 packs a day and my dad smoked 3 packs a day and my dad drank 27 screwdrivers a day. He died at 70 pounds of cirrhosis of the liver, and he was 260 as an adult. And so I knew then I never wanted to smoke. I never did a drug. And I was too short to smoke anyway, so I didn't want to get any shorter. And bottom line is, I did do some drinking in high school and college, I guess, just to stay up with the peers, and I'm not a very good drunk. So I decided most of my time is, you know, if anybody really knows me, it's Diet Coke or a bottle of water, glass of wine once in a while. But depressed, absolutely. There's times that I got depressed and didn't know how I was going to make payroll, didn't know how I was going to make payments to the bank, even after 1982. You know, it's never an ending battle of success. It's just another day, and you got to stay focused, and you got to work hard, and you got to be honest and pay, you know, collect your money and not be afraid to ask for it, and then pay your bills, and then hopefully invest wisely and learn from the people who have been there and done that. Respect your elders all your life because they are the ones that have been there and done that, and it was one thing I listened. SBA with Glenn Davis here is a big part of my life of being involved with a lot of people that have been there and done that. And SCORE helped me out a lot. Glenn helped me and bankers. When they told me no, there was a reason, you know, because they had seen somebody make these mistakes. What was the rest of the question?
What about your sisters?
Sisters. So on depression, I will tell you that I had a weird way of reacting to it. When my mother died, when my brother died, when something wrong went in my life, the harder that my life got, for some weird reason, my addiction was work. And I guess it was the best of all addictions, but it didn't help my marriage much, and I've learned a lot from that. But bottom line is, the harder that things got going for me, I kicked it in full gear harder, too. And it was just it was an interesting way that I look back myself and wonder, that energy just became inside me to just work 10 times harder and 10 times more successful. And so sometimes I just piss myself off on purpose to work harder. So I just, whatever works. My four sisters, my sister Susan lives in Portland, Oregon. Every month I try to help her out financially in any way she needs it. She hasn't been able to overcome the things that my father was doing when he was an alcoholic. Just before my dad died, I got to become his friend while I laid in the VA hospital dying. I remember him telling me one day, this is a hell of a way to go, from shrinking from 260 to 70 pounds. And I'd remind him about the sexual things and the beatings to me and to my sisters and to my mom and the things that went on. And he swore on a million Bibles, if they were could have been in there, that he couldn't remember any of them. So alcoholism is a disease. And my dad had a disease. I think deep down inside, he was the greatest guy that could ever be. He was a good guy, because I met a lot of people in South Omaha that knew him in his earlier days before the disease took over his mind. He was a great gymnast. He was a great wrestler. He was a great everything. He could dance like Fred Astaire. So John Hoyt Sr. was a hell of a man in his time, and his disease of alcoholism took over his brain. I believe that disease is really what took his life the way it did, and I know he regrets it. So that's why I'm so involved with the John L. Hoyt Center for Recovery Stevens Center, because I believe if we can help people from drug, alcohol, and mental illness, we can give them a chance to have another second chance in life, get back with their families, be there for their kids and their friends. And my sister Susan, I talk to as often as possible, but she's just never been able to overcome the adversity and kind of stays in a one-bedroom apartment and goes to AA every day. She's a recovered alcoholic. My sister Kathy, who's 47-ish, was also a victim of the child problems, and she is now the director, making $130,000 a year at the Arapaho House in Thornton, Colorado, outside Denver, of a drug, alcohol, mental illness, and sexual abuse program, an $18 million a year budget. She's the director. I'm so proud of her. She's doing what she knows and understands and staying focused and calls me for advice once in a while, and that's not too often. So I usually call her because she also got a master's degree in psychology. My sister Donna married a rich farmer and moved out to western Nebraska and became an LPN and raised three daughters. And my sister Angela lives in Omaha, married an accountant at West Telemarketing, and they've been married for about 20 years or something like that, and have three kids. I have a nephew and two nieces there. So it's interesting that the two daughters, or my two sisters, that weren't in the tornado of our life, you know, when they were real, real young, they had a normal life and got normal marriages, and they've had their problems, don't let me kid you, but they weren't near what Susan and Kathy went through that never got married. So I do believe that if you hang with the ducks, you will quack like a duck. You are your environment. You become your environment. So be sure which ducks you hang with. And my brother, of course, passed that I told you.
Here are two questions from opposite ends of the political spectrum. Have you thought about political involvement, like running for office? And then the next questioner says, why did you get so involved in politics?
John Hoyt for Senate. It's interesting. When I married Denise, the first thing I told her is, someday I want to be mayor of Omaha, and she said, you'll be single. I am proud to say that, right, wrong, or indifferent, if I shouldn't say this, Monday was a big time in my life that her and I settled our divorce. It's over. There's no court. Our two boys are our most important thing that we're going to focus, Jeremy and Justin. And I went over and saw Denise last night, and I told her I loved her. I always did, and I'm there for her the rest of my life. And that's the way I'm going to have my ex-wife and I have a relationship. And she hugged me back and said, I know you'll always be there for me and the boys, and I'm grateful for that. So that was the most encouraging night that I've had in the last 2 good years. it's no fun to go through it. I hate it, but I'm going to focus the boys and focus my business and friends and charities. And as far as politics, I'm on the planning board for 8 years. I work hard at it. Sometimes it's 40 hours a month. It's non-paying. It's appointed. I was the first ever in history to be appointed to the planning board by the Douglas County Board because of Dwight Peterson that legislated a legislature, had a bill. And so it's kind of neat because I represent outside the city limits, which isn't much left in the three-mile jurisdiction. So I hope they don't fire me soon. But I've enjoyed it, and I've learned so much, and I think I've been able to be on a board that I can give back. I understand real estate now very well and the economics of Omaha and all the surrounding communities. Do I have a goal to be a politician? I don't know. After you see all the things you see and all the name-calling and all the stress that it takes, and I don't want to be bald like Pete Ricketts. I don't want to go that way because I don't know if that hurt him or helped him, but, you know, it's whatever. Pete's one of the smartest guys I ever met, nicest guys, but was it because he's bald? Was it because he didn't know that well? Is it because other people don't win, Don Stenberg, others? You know, I got 4 phone calls this week, people wanting to run for Senate and, and running for other offices. And it's just hard, and I don't know that I'll venture off into that area. I think I'm always going to be probably a main supporter. I'm a Republican, but I love all people. And I voted for Democrats, and I have voted for independents. But strongly Republican has been my main, and it's been a special Democrat if I'd ever vote for him. But I have, because if the person was really what I stood for, sometimes they register for whatever reason that they personally chose. Congressman Lee Terry's wife's here, and Lee's like another bloodline of my life, and he's been a good man, and his father's here. Where's Lee Sr.? He tried to kick me out of Rotary once. When they changed the rule of since 1905 in Rotary to let women in the club, I brought 5 in the first month. And I remember him getting up and saying he's putting a restraining order against me to bring in any more women. He also holds me totally responsible for losing his congressional campaign. When I was 16 years old, I had the pickup truck, and I walked into his office, and I said, "I want to put up signs for you, Mr. Terry." And he said, "Well, that'd be great. Here they are. Go put them up." And I saw a megaphone over on the desk. I said, "Hey, can I use this too?" And he says, "Well, whatever works." So I went out all that afternoon putting up signs, and the whole weeks and months, and all right up to the night of the election was the next day. And 2 in the morning, I'm still going down the neighborhoods, "Lee Terry for Congress." He said I upset all the neighbors in Omaha that they all didn't vote for him. So Lee Terry Jr. took the megaphone away from me when he ran.
I don't know about this question, but I'll give it the way it's written. If you became Miss America, how would you improve the world?
I'd overcome world hunger. If I could improve anything, and I guess I do have an answer for that, I would probably push what Chuck Lakin's family did in a recent multi-million-dollar donation in Council Bluffs. I truly believe in taking all these charities and paradigming their brains and paradigming the geniuses of all the directors and the boards, and they work together. I love when I watch Trinity Church and Westside Church, the two pastors on their ads together, you know, for their purpose and not trying to fight for the people, but fight for the reason. And if more like Catholic Charities and Stevens Centers and Family Services and all these different organizations could put their power together and less administrative costs and more for the cause and the need, and put their abilities and brains together to create a synergy and energy that was all on the same team without trying to fight for everybody's dollars separately, but to unite, and even greater than what United Way's done, and no disrespect, but, you know, a better program of communication, because I think communication is so important, and I think team effort and synergy and energy is so important. And that'd be the United States and nationwide and worldwide goal that I'd have if I was Mrs. America.
The Beatles retired at the top of their game. Do you have an end target?
I believe in God, and I don't believe in astrology, but I still read my Capricorn every day. And I read fortune cookies once in a while, so I'm a hypocrite, I guess. And I got a fortune cookie one time that I've kept my probably 20 years, and it says, to be rich is to know when you have enough. And I used to not ever figure that out, but I think that lately I've learned that retiring, McCartney's still not retired, and the Beatles never did retire, you know? They just continued, but I say now that I love what I do. I have to say, when I was mowing yards and messing with the grease and grindings from the lawnmower blades flying in my eyes and getting hit with sand pits and everything else, you know, that was no fun. Sweating at 110 degree weather, freezing and snow removal days. But now that I've been able to do the different things, I love what I do. I love the charities I'm in. I love the friends that I have. And I've been playing an 80-20 rule in my life. I've been getting rid of 80% of the things I don't need that I only use 20% of the time, and keeping 20% of the things that I use 80% of the time. Finding that materialistic things never will make you happy, and really finding that your true friends and the true things you believe in will. With that, I've realized I don't need to do as many more as deals, be more selective in what I do, and they make real strong common sense. I know that Courtney Vicani's maiden name, your wife, your dad once told me, and you probably don't know this is coming. About 10 years I've known Courtney's dad since I was 14, and he told me once, why risk what you have to gain something you don't need to lose all you have? And that makes a lot of sense.
In your young years, the tough years, did you ever feel despair, a feeling sometimes that you just wanted to give up?
Chuck, tell him how many. Many times I sat in Chuck's office and looked at him and crying. Many times I said, I don't know what the hell I'm going to do next and how I'm going to get through this. Pam Harrington, wave your hand, Pam, was my high school counselor and was there the night my mother died. The morning my mom died, she was there that night. I didn't know how I was going to get through it. But prayer and friends and loved ones have held me up. So when the things get down, as they say, the rough gets going, the tough get going. And I think, again, the rougher things got in my life, the tougher I got, and the more I wanted to help. I've had so many, even I've had friends of mine and business associates say that you never hold a grudge. You get pissed off, and then you get over it. I'm not that way, they'll say, you know. And I say, you got to let it go. You can't hold in animosity. You got to let it go. You made a mistake. Forgive yourself first. If you don't forgive yourself, you can't forgive others. And so I think that's my biggest ability, is that I'm able to say I'm sorry, admit that I'm wrong, and give up the problem and fix it. You know, if there's an obstacle, find the strategy. Don't dwell on it. Don't hold yourself responsible. And when an employer or a friend makes a mistake, forgive them. If they didn't lie, steal, or cheat, it's okay. If they did, then get rid of them out of your life, as God, you know, says that's okay. You got to choose your people you're around. But if they make a mistake honestly, or if you make one, forgive yourself and forgive them.
Was there anybody that you looked up to when you were a teenager as somebody that you wanted to be like?
Well, P.J. Morgan was a Douglas County commissioner, and he introduced me when I won Youth of the Year for Omaha in 1974, just right before my mother died, and then right after she died, I received these series of awards. I started an employment agency at Westside High School, found 300 kids a job to prove that if they got off their butt, they could find one. So I got the Youth of the Year award from Peter Kiewit himself before he passed at the Cloud Room. And when I got the award from the Douglas County Commissioner, P.J. Morgan, who was, I think, ran for Congress, didn't he, Lee? And that's when I became a Republican. Because P.J. Morgan said to me, he says at 14, he says, "What are you, Democrat or Republican?" I said, "What are you, Mr. Morgan?" He said, "I'm a Republican." I said, "Me too." And then he said, "What do you want to do when you grow up?" He says, "What?" And I said, "Well, what do you do, Mr. Morgan?" He says, "I do real estate and management investments." And I said, "Me too." So there is a lot of truth to that.
Was there a point in your early life when you said, "I am going to make this"?
I was looking at my mom in the casket when I was 16 years old, and I told her to myself as she laid there dead, I'll never forget it, that I just had this ambition to cut my hair that was about as long as Melissa's, and that was normal in the, you know, in the 70s and the hippie days. And but I looked at her and I just said, "I'm going to be a man." The pastor told me the day that she died that I had to grow up and be a leader. I could no longer be a kid. I took about three days to figure out what that meant. And then I told her I'd be a millionaire at age 30 and that I'm going to help my sisters and my brother the rest of my life. And I said that not knowing what was going to happen, but it just became a focus. I saw it. I visualized it. I believed it. And I made it. Didn't make me any different of a person, except for I had a lot of learning to do as maturity goes along. And those that you know me saw those days in my earlier days that what matters is what you got in your heart and the friends that are still there for you after good times and bad. And those are the best days now that I have.
Why lawn mowing? Why not some other kind of business?
I didn't have a choice. The only thing I inherited was, and the only thing they didn't take from us when my mom died, was the Sears Craftsman lawnmower. So I had hay fever, and I hated mowing the lawn, as Gary said he heard was true. And when I got that lawnmower, I figured out I got to do something with it. Many times I wondered if I had a wrench or if I would have had scissors or whatever, I'd have been the best at that. I wasn't going to fail. I set my mind to it. No matter what obstacle came in front of me, I took it on one thing at a time. I just took it on. And God bless it, there was a lot of obstacles every single hour. And some of them I never figured out for sure I was going to get through them, but it just happened. Prayer, perseverance, believing in yourself, visualizing, asking a million questions, and listening. Listening's a big thing that my life coach, Susan Konings, taught me. So, and Susan's here and Laura's here. Raise your hand. These two ladies just wrote a book, so you got to buy their books too. But I'll just tell you that the lawnmower was the only choice I had. And then I figured out how can I use that lawnmower and mow as many yards as I could, many acres as I could, and now many countries. No, states. Countries. That could be next.
I asked this next question, this last question, with some trepidation and a warning that we have only got 2 or 3 minutes left, John. Okay. What have you found in Rotary that is so important in your life?
I'm a proud member. You can see all these Rotary things. And today I'm missing Rotary, so this is really a special thing. But I'll make up. I've got 28 years perfect attendance. Suburban Rotary has been a big part of my life. Gary, and how many Rotarians are in here? Rotary is a club. Rotary was made by man, not by God, but God made man. Rotary was started in 1905 by Paul Harris, and Rotary is a mixture of men and now women, thanks to me and not Lee Terry. And Rotary is reaching out to the people all over the world, every country in the world, for every cause in the world, eradicating polio, to helping buy fire engines, to buying animals for zoos, to giving smallpox vaccinations to people giving of their vocation all over the world for different reasons, dental, eyes, surgery, painting. I've seen it all. And it's just totally, totally service above self. You're doing it for the cause and not for the ego. There is no allowance for ego in Rotary. I learned that, and I've watched it. And the ones that go in there for trying to figure out how to make their business more successful only don't last long. You got to go in Rotary and stay in Rotary to serve above self. And because I've been admired that and learned from it, and definitely learned from the businessmen and women in there, I love it. I look forward to every Thursday to go. I can't get enough of it. I'm half broke most of the time because whenever you're in the press or in Metro Monthly Magazine or One or any of the other ones or the World Herald, you get fined, and so they've taken most of my net worth. And it's been worth it. But the last thing about Rotary is the friendship and the fellowship. I've been able to go to a world conference at the 100th anniversary in Illinois and recently did a $250,000 donation, probably the shortest and the youngest that is now on the Hall and Wall of Fame of giving that much money. And it was not about the money. It was to be able to be part of that and to be on that wall with some of the greatest men and women that ever lived in business. And I think I still hold the record that I was 19 when I joined Rotary, so I still think I'm the youngest that ever joined, in Nebraska at least. And I'm in a club called YPO now, Young President's Organization, that it's also been really good for me. And so I believe that all service clubs are wonderful for their causes and for the fellowship and the relationships that it builds.
That's our noon forum. Thank you very much, John Hoyt. Our next noon forum will be Friday, April 20th here at the club. We will hear from a spokesman for the ethanol industry about a product that has huge implications for this corn-growing region of the country. Again, that is Friday, April 20th. We are adjourned.
You've been listening to a luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club. Today's speaker is Omaha native John Hoyt, author of From the Ground Up. This program was recorded by KIOS-FM on Thursday, March 15th, 2007, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. The Omaha Press Club holds these noontime educational forums each month. The next forum will be held on Friday, April 20th at 12 noon. At that time, the guest speaker will be Todd Sneller, the administrator of the Nebraska Ethanol Board. His topic will be Ethanol 101, What Ethanol Means to You, Nebraska, and the World. If you'd like to attend this or other future programs in the series, call the Omaha Press Club at 345-8008. These events are open to both members and non-members of the Omaha Press Club. The Omaha Press Club is located on the 22nd floor of the First National Center, 16th and Dodge, in downtown Omaha. Complete noon forum listings are available on the Internet. Visit our website at kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Coate, thanking you for listening.